Okay, I guess we'll call the meeting to order. So, I would like to acknowledge with much gratitude that we're meeting today on the traditional and unceded lands of the Coast Salish people, and in particular, the Qualicum First Nation. I think we'll start with introductions. We have some new members to our committee. And so, perhaps we can just say how long we've been on the committee approximately, and maybe just two or three sentences about your background or your interests and whatnot. So, where do we want to start? Maybe we'll start with Dad, even.
Welcome to the team. My name is Shinjini Mehta. I am the Climate Action and Emergency Program Coordinator for the town. I joined about 6 months ago, almost 6 months ago, and very happy to be here and work with a group of people who have great ideas. So looking forward to hearing yours as well.
Oh, you met Bernadette.
My name is Doug Crosswood. I live in Qualicum Beach. I was here for well over 15 years. I lived on Muskogee Island before that. I'm a retired forester, interested in renewable energy and all things sustainability related. My passion is the need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions across all aspects of our lives as quickly as possible. So please sit here.
I'm Marion Vincent. I have only been here for a couple of years. Joined the committee, I think, about a year ago. And I'm a retired resource planner. I work on watershed planning and agricultural planning. My interest is sustainability and how communities can be made resilient and face the coming challenges of climate change.
Yeah, I'm Dave Hutchings. I'm a retired teacher. I lived in Qualicum Beach for, well, almost 20 years now. And I have always been interested in things environmental and in the much larger sense. And, of course, that's much more to the fore these days than it was 20, 25 years ago. I've been on the committee, I don't know how many years now.
I think in two or three, maybe at least four.
Yeah, at least four. Yeah.
Four?
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to the rest of this year and to getting to know our two new members.
Jean? Oh, you're allowed to say who you are.
I don't hear a voice. I'm an interested spectator. I'm a counselor as well in Qualicum Beach, Jean Young, and I'm also Anne's alternate in case she got hit by a tree or something. Doesn't look like it'll happen, so, but I'm just here to be as a spectator.
Hi everyone, I'm Luke Sales. I'm the Director of Planning and Development for the town. I've been on the committee items for a long time, and I've been with the town for 15 years now. I'm very proud to have been involved in many of the town's environmental initiatives over that time.
I'm Michael Karasovic. I've been around Nelson Qualicum since the early 90s. My parents lived here. Now only one parent is left. And I've come back from teaching in India for 6 years just last year. So now I'm kind of committed to this area. My interest is Mount Aerosmith Biosphere Region and developing integration with nature. I am an architect, registered in New York and in India, and I have practiced it all my life. I was born in Point Grey, Vancouver, and I grew up in Surrey and Coquitlam. Graduate of BCIT before I went off to study architecture in Oregon, New York. I did my doctorate in Vienna on architecture and spirituality, and so my whole work has been kind of coming towards this kind of unity of practice and nature and humanity. That's what I've been working on a long time. The return to here is to actually bring, like when I left, it was very frustrating for me because, you know, the culture in the 80s was difficult to work with architecturally. And I grew up on Cedarwood, you know, and the mill closed because there wasn't any left. My dad, you know, the mill closed before my dad retired because was just nothing left. And so the whole idea is to, for me to integrate my knowledge and try to bring it back. That's one thing. That's what I'm doing. I'm not retired. I don't think I'll retire.
Yeah. I'm Angela Vandenhout. I moved to Palm Beach about 6 years ago with my young family. I've got two girls there, 6 and 9, and my husband who has a marketing company here. I run a small business from my home in Pelican Beach. I support First Nations communities and help them start business and economic development. My interest here is, my academic background is in environment and sustainability. And as it relates to what I do and where I live, we see a lot of development happening around us. And I believe that there's innovations and ways to think about things in a creative mindset where we can be doing things more sustainably. So, thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. Great to have new members and continuation with the old members. I'm Ann. I'm the counselor. I'm the chair of the committee. I'm not actually a voting member, but and I have been on council off and on since 2014. I grew up in Qualicum Beach, in nature and loving nature, and my portfolio, I'm the parks and recreation, and under that falls environment and sustainability. So, yeah, and I'm very pleased to be here and with all of you, and we have quite a bit of work to do today, as always, with this committee, we get lots done, so. Let's start with the adoption of the agenda. I did ask Bernadette before the meeting if she could add back under future agenda items, need a copy of the town-owned buildings utility metrics report and the RDN emissions report, so. That won't affect what we're doing today, but just to have that on for future reference. So, adoption of the agenda by consent, unless anybody has anything that, any changes, concerns? Nope. Okay. And approval of the minutes. The last one for January, the last meeting was January the 5th. There was one change, and that was just on the top there, correcting the date. But I saw anyway, so does anybody have any other? Nope, can we get a mover then? Davis?
Mm-hmm.
And a seconder? Marion, thank you. And all those in favor? Great. And opposed? Carried, unless Doug, you're still.
Oh, I'm sorry. I printed off the agenda for February 23rd. That's today, right?
Yeah.
But the minutes that are attached to it,
yep,
are November 23rd.
They're not, actually. They're January 5th, so I just changed. I have Bernadette.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That's why I was.
Yeah.
But this is actually January 5th.
Yes.
That's what you just approved.
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay, great. Business arising from the minutes. Well, that's what we're going to be working on. I think it comes up again under new business. Nope. Ongoing business. So we'll deal with it there. And then the recommendations from council with regard to food security and number 4, 1, and 2, the plant-based treaty, so that will be in an upcoming one once we finish our mitigation work. So we'll keep those things on the agenda for the next meeting. Hopefully we get finished today, the work on climate mitigation, and then we can start next meeting on these items. Everybody, that sounds okay with everybody?
Have we seen the plant-based treaty?
There was a letter that was circulated.
I don't think I've seen it.
It was a lengthful website.
Okay.
And, yeah, well, anyway, we can go back into that.
Bernadette, what's the next the next meeting, can you make sure, especially for our new members, they'll need any of the corresponding documents or reports? Wonderful. So those will be recirculated for everyone.
So we didn't get those sent before?
No,
I guess.
Well, but
three or four things, the report, you talked about them this morning.
Right. No, I don't think they wouldn't have been in any of those packages. It would have been previously to the committee members as an attachment to the agenda. But
I was just going to also say the plant-based treaty, no, I don't think that was ever sent. Yeah. Print out. I think it was a reference to the letter of reference and internal documents that have been developed. So, you know, when this does come back, that's, we can put that out. But it is a reference from another. So you could easily find it on policy.
Yeah, there's a bit of a campaign.
No, it was never circulated until now.
There was a letter that came. It was a campaign. And so, and we've actually received it now from numerous people asking us to look into this. So. Okay, so we're going to skip on to, I think, status of recommendations to council. There isn't anything currently. And so then we're on to ongoing business. And that will be Appendix A and reviewing the information. I don't know if Luke or Shinjini wants to give us an update or walk us through or whatever you're...
I can walk you through.
Walk it through? Okay. If you don't have any additional copies of that, at least one of them.
I can use my glasses.
I'd be happy to go print off a few copies of it. Do people need prints?
I thought I've got a print to the agenda.
Okay.
But if you are moving those,
I don't think that helps.
You want a few copies? So raise your hand if you want a copy.
Four.
Okay. I'll talk to you. You can go ahead and start.
Okay.
Print your name for life.
I know, it wasn't, I tried that before. Shinjini, it would be really useful to get these things in a form that we could comment on because it's hard to comment on these, you can't print them out.
And just restore a PDF, this,
what?
I don't have the ability to comment on a PDF.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
There you go. So this brings up, right? That was just something that it's easy to comment on and save your comments, like print them out. I guess. PDF if you have Adobe Acrobat, not if you're a cheap hole and have Reader.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah, software.
Yeah, I know. What I normally do is print it off and then I just write on it.
Write on it. Well, that's
the old-fashioned way.
I think we could send out the Excel.
Yeah, well, maybe Excel.
You
know,
would be good, yeah.
I put some comments on it. Wow, that is a common comment. That is common. Okay, that is. Oh, yeah. Let's take a note. And Excel. Okay, so this is a project that has been ongoing for several months now. We had a workshop with the VIU and NAGRI folks who come to facilitate, and we talked about all our climate mitigation goals, the visions that we have for Polisson Beach, and that resulted in a list of recommendations which was structured around
community mitigation. So there's a couple of areas, and then we had this very beautiful chart which was drawn up by an artist as we spoke. So we'll send that to you. So it's very, it's like our vision document.
We looked at it through, yeah.
Oh, you have, yeah. So that's kind of like our vision, overall vision document for what we're trying to do. So this went through a couple of iterations with the committee here, and really looking at more the structuring of these interventions. What should the interventions be, and how should we structure them? So before I go into each and every one of these, I just wanted to, you don't have to do anything, I'll just, so there's like five or six areas. One is corporate reduction of corporate emissions. One is education and awareness. The third is incentives through like tax incentives or, getting people to do stuff. Direct influence on the reduction of community emissions, policy interventions, having a broader policy or, we'll discuss some of those actions in there, and overall advocacy in the region with neighboring municipalities, RDM, and, maybe even the province. So these were like the broad six areas where we decided to structure it. So the first one is obviously the easiest one to do for us because it's reduction of corporate emissions. And just as a background, before I start this, the RDN, we worked with the RDN Alien Papers on a study for community emissions across the RDN. So they've done like a full community-wide thing for the regional district, and then for each of the municipalities, they had a separate one. So that's on our website now. Okay, this goes. Maybe we can put the link in the minutes next time.
Right.
For the community emissions, the one, the climate action. So we have a climate action page.
Oh, yes.
It's
brand new.
It's brand new.
Brand new.
And sometimes they'll be a work in progress. So it gives you an idea of where our emissions are. So the highest is obviously transportation, is about 26 or 27%. And the corporate emissions are measured separately, so they're not in that report. And that is an exercise we do, and I will have to do this MESH, because that's reported to the province to get a grant from the local government climate action plan program. So that's the climate action plan. So those are the emissions inventories, and some of the other improves the community can access in terms of home improvements and what kind of standards that we follow.
Okay, so are those basically the two things that we were asking for future agenda items for sessions, right? Maybe. The copy of the sound on building utility metrics report and the RDN emissions report.
This is the RDN emissions report this year.
Yeah.
We haven't really done the metrics report.
Okay.
We're working on that.
Okay. So one of the sessions.
Oh, that was the background. If any questions for Jenny's part?
I'm concerned, Jenny, with the fact that these categories don't really reflect what we were originally working with, which was, looking at transportation, buildings, and food security, and then having these as sort of subheadings, like the having the, what are they, got here, education, awareness, incentives, direct influence, policy, and advocacy, and so on. It looks to me the way that they're presented here, they're kind of separated from those initial headings, those initial areas of interest that we built the recommendations with, because based on the RDM information that we had, that it was transportation was about 60% and buildings about 40%, and then there was some others. So I'm finding that the specific actions are kind of have become unconnected from those initial
the emissions
that we are working with. And the original ideas and the way we kind of presented them. I know this was the facilitator's idea of how we should structure the plan, but I mean at the time, I think there were some suggestions that it would be better to keep to our original structure of the transportation and buildings and then food security. So, and also that structure is reflected in the sustainability plan that the town of Falcon Beach had in 2010, I believe it is. And it also looked at buildings and the transportation of buildings, and it also had waste reduction as a third category. But it seems to me that what we have to decide before we go any further on this plan is deciding where it's going to end up, what's its home, what it is going to be. And staff has been a bit vague about that, but it seems to me that as a committee, it's hard for us to really, you know, comment on the structure of Appendix A until we know what it's going to do. And it seems to me that the obvious place for our work that we've spent quite a bit of work reviewing different plans and the workshop and various meetings, would be to build on that sustainability plan of 2010 and then the OCP update of 2018 that suggested that a sustainability action plan would be part of the OCP review, which is now in place. So anyway, is it possible to look at the work we've done so far from the perspective of making it into this sustainability plan, because that's basically what it is.
Well, I think the direction from council was for the committee to come up with climate mitigation actions. So, you know, that we have a climate change adaptation plan, and so this was to look specifically at mitigation. So, you know, this is a list, I guess, of climate mitigation actions, and I can understand, like you're saying, that perhaps it's better to have it under transportation and then list
how the
town operational, education, advocacy, whatever, instead of having it under those other ones and then fitting and prioritize transportation because it was
the biggie.
And then other, like, building or other actions.
Mm-hmm.
Do other people feel the same way, that it should be focused under?
And there's a number of options. It could be a sustainability action plan that segues into the OCP review to fill in that space where it says, okay, we're going to do a sustainability action plan as part of the next OCP review. Or it could be part of the climate mitigation plan, such as what SOOKS had. We did a review of the SOOKS plan. Did you get a chance to look at that? And it's the climate adaptation and mitigation plan.
Okay.
Which, you know, as far as sustainability goes. But it would be a bit more work to kind of, you know, have to
consider
the plan already approved and then try to modify it.
Yeah.
One, rather than here's this sort of stage waiting in the OCP for this very work.
Well, there is a 2012 sustainability action plan, and that's kind of the place
I'm trying to find that, you know. But we don't find it on the internet. Every now and again, like I ran into it once before, but darn if I found it again.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Tune in here, because obviously learning is going on. sustainability action plan, mitigation, and this other recent sustainability, climate change got a sustainability action plan, and now there's mitigation on the table. So what I need to know is how they really relate. Like, to me, it seems like they all have to kind of interact positively because they're basically the same subject, right? So maybe there's and then the mitigation, I'm understanding that is kind of in a set of points that don't really relate to any of these things. Am I understanding that right? If that's what you're saying?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out how they do relate.
Okay, so
documents like the sustainability plan that's part of the OCP.
Right, sure.
If we look at the framework
We've done a lot of environmental sustainability actions over the last, 10 years, like we've been talking about, which includes building, which includes adaptation projects. But what we have on the table right now is, these different siloed kind of plans, and this piece was missing. But if you had to kind of put it all under one umbrella, it would be a sustainability and climate action mandate plan, something like that. So this is just, theoretically just a part of that. And where we park it, how, that's obviously recommended, and we can work on that.
I think what I would say is that, Marion, your point is well taken, that the format that the consultant presents isn't the way that you scan on the report, or you say it, is not the same as some of those other reports. But what I would say is that this is not a final product. I mean, this is a stage in the development of policy development that maybe it's going to end up in, maybe it's going to end up in some other future document. This has no charm to it, I guess you could say. It's not really intended for mass consumption. What this is to respond to council's request that the community help them prioritize action. And the same material here might very well inform a future plan. So I guess I would say that I see your point. I'm less concerned about, whether it's categorized by transportation, housing, or by the actionable areas, town can do this in direct action versus advocacy. I could go with your way too. I don't think it really matters that much in this particular case because of the fact that all this is going to flow to council and hopefully inform their actions moving forward, whether in policy or direct intervention of some type. So that's helpful. Please think of this as a step in the direction of something else and not a final product.
I guess my concern is that so many of what I thought were really good ideas that we came up with through the workshop and through the meetings and so on, it's kind of been boiled down and kind of fragmented such that if I were a counselor and I were presented with this, I wouldn't really understand where it would go and how I would use it. And so that's why I think it should be a more fleshed out plan. So if not a standalone, I don't think it should be a standalone plan because there's already so many things, but it should have a more clear statement of the objectives and strategies that we came up with.
Doug, you were looking like you wanted to jump in at one point.
I was just going to suggest one thing that would be easy to do would just be to put another column in here, which would be the sectoral affiliation of each of these actions, whether it's building, transportation, food systems, forests and land, and others, say, for example, and then you could sort it either way. You just put the button, oh, I want it sorted by sector, or no, I want it sorted by these existing categories, and we could look at it either way. I don't know if that would help very much. Mary and I initially didn't want it organized this way. I wanted it by those sectoral categories, but given that we've got this in front of us and we're all here ready to work, I'm willing to work on it in this format. And just maybe a little bit of jumping around from one box to another, but that would happen anyhow. So I'm fine with that. I don't know if that's helpful. I'm trying to be helpful.
Well, these are good, very good discussions to have. I think it really boils down to where does this go, because if you look at it from a planning perspective, these categories make sense. But if you look at it from a mitigation perspective, then of course the sectoral visions make more sense. So it's more, if we had to develop this into a plan, integrate it into a plan, that's how planners would do it, I think. I think that's the logic for how it's kind of arranged.
But a key point is you brought up what did council ask us to do, and we're trying to do what council asked us to do. They asked for action.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not asking for a plan. They're not asking for a big document. They're saying, give us some actions to do. So from that perspective, this document, I think we can work with it.
One thing I would ask is I'm coincidentally just working on an action plan. I've gone online and I started looking up what the heck is an action plan. So I'm an architect. I don't do business. Well, although I'm doing business now, but one of the things that it says over and over again is that an action plan is only useful if you set a goal. So what is the goal?
Reduce greenhouse gas emissions, I would say. It's probably...
Focus only on greenhouse gas, not on climate. I'm not on biosphere and all that. It's just greenhouse gas.
Business-specific documents,
Just greenhouse gas.
Because this committee exists at the pleasure of the council, and I think it's a stretch, that's what they asked us to do. Nobody's saying that, you know, biosphere or other things are unimportant. And at different times, the committee has talked about things like water and... vegetation and stuff that are not climate related, but we were specifically asked to give us some climate mitigation actions.
Climate or greenhouse gas?
Well, climate, but as you know, greenhouse gases are the primary cause of climate change, so that's green.
What about heat islands and water, care for water, controlling water, taking care of how water flows, where it goes? Well, rainwater collection, all these things related.
They are related, but certainly behind the work that the perspective we were given based on the scientific literature is that the primary cause of climate change is the buildup in the atmosphere of greenhouse gases. As you say, not the only one, but the primary one. So that's what we've been asked to do, is to make recommendations related to that.
Like stormwater management are looked at in the adaptation plan.
Well, I just, if the goal has to be clear, the jump from climate to greenhouse gas, is that an assumption that the council is making?
Well, what happened, you know, we had numerous delegations to council about climate concerns, and council ended up eventually declaring a climate emergency. So we didn't want to just declare a climate emergency and not attach something to that. Just, you know, those are just words, right? So the idea was that we would refer, for potential actions, we would refer the matter to the committee, and the motion was that council refers the topic of climate change mitigation to the Select Committee on Environment and Sustainability for recommendations for climate mitigation actions.
Okay. Yeah, and just to be clear, the actions here are not all strictly greenhouse gas emissions. For example, rewild landscapes, consider working with Aerosmith Medicos to determine appropriate plans for town landscaping, update urban forest master plan, encourage reducing water uses. So their point about water is reflected in there.
Well,
so
I was talking about a goal.
Greenhouse gas reduction. And you know, there's no addressing concerns like species extinction or.
But for example, planting trees, making more greenery, obviously mitigates the climate.
Yes, those things are.
So all I was referring to was like a goal. If it, maybe the count, this group has to say exactly specifically what that idea of mitigating encompasses.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you're going to point straight to greenhouse gas or focus on that, then that would be a kind of a goal for the action plan. Focus on that or not. I'm not saying what it should be, but the goal of it. I mean, the council, you clarify the goal, and then the council says, you don't like this goal, we want to clarify in a different way. That might have to happen.
But I think what we're hearing is that we're not looking at developing a climate mitigation plan. We're just being asked to come up with climate mitigation actions, sort of divorced from visual goals, objectives, strategies, just to get cut to the chase and give the effective implementation strategy, basically, which is really hard to do, because you really need the rationale. You know, trying to tell the public, you know, we've all got to put in heat pumps and quit driving. But the council's just going to sort of make that a policy and implement it without some background to it. It's going to be a bit of a problem. That's why I thought it should be part of the sustainability plan. You know, if we are just to do specific actions, so I think it has to have more of a connection to the kinds of things we talked about and be fleshed out a bit more than these kind of bare bones statements.
Yeah, I sort of think I'm thinking of this as sort of ad hocism, you know, rather than a sort of coherent plan and a we have in our minds, I suppose, the kind of ultimate framework we want this to come into. But I'm not sure when council gives us something like this, I'm not necessarily confident that they are working towards filling in that framework rather than just, oh, we want to seem to be doing this. Or want to, and I'm not accusing, I'm just suggesting that that's what this seems to me to be what we're dealing with. Now, I know we've been directed to come up with this, but I'm not sure about the whether that direction will get us where we want to go.
Well, certainly, I mean, the committee can make a recommendation to council that these are, you know, the climate or the mitigation actions that we've come up with, but, you know, that we think that it should be part of a bigger framework or a plan or part of the, or, you know, melded with the OCP or whatever it is that the committee feels. There's certainly opportunity to make
that recommendation. And then, because I know that right now council is overwhelmed with the provincial initiatives.
That way
we wouldn't lose all the work we've
done. Just one more little bit of the history of how this came about. You mentioned the climate emergency. The other thing was there was provincial money for a climate change adaptation plan, and a consultant prepared one. And this committee, previous iteration of the committee, reviewed it. And one of our key responses was, great, you've got climate change adaptation, but you haven't got a climate change mitigation plan. You need to do climate change mitigation. And council said, oh, yeah, that's right. Please recommend to us what climate change mitigation would look like. And so we started, you know, brainstorming what the actions would be, but and then said we could also recommend that it be folded into a policy and planning framework that would be most effective. And I'd be kind of inclined to take the guidance from staff on how that would work, to an extent at least.
Any thoughts, Luther?
Well, I think, you know, Mary and I kind of articulated earlier that the challenge is, given the other priorities that we're tackled with right now, when you say things like we should probably fold this into a really, you know, much grander planning process, just my feet over here a little bit, just because there's so many major projects that are going to council that has had to defer some of council's priorities to 2028, right? Like, they're already pushed well back. So we do have an OCP review scheduled for next year, and, you know, that's what council on this, how we focus and plan for that OCP review. But, you know, certainly in the grand scheme, like, it probably, this type of a mitigation framework does belong in some plan, probably similar in scope and scale to our climate change adaptation plan, right, that has a full description of options, scenarios, and what we might be dealing with and why we should be dealing with it the way that we're proposing. So certainly what I see as the right way to do this is something similar to that would also be nestled into the adaptation plan or complementary to. I just caution, you know, against, biting off more than we can chew at the moment in terms of actually producing the plan. So I would hate to see the good work that has been done so far, you know, lost, you know, while we're holding our breath waiting for a much larger ecosystem, because what I see on the screen and in this framework is actually very actionable things that I think, you know, probably if we spent 2 years and $500,000, we'd come up with 80% of the same things.
I was actually surprised at how much overlap there was between SUC Yeah. You know, like, it was very similar.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And we're about the same in Norway from other
planets. I think all these planets are more away from each other and ideas. Mm-hmm. One idea in the Sook plan that I really liked was, and maybe could be communicated to council, was just an overall policy to prioritize sustainability issues. And just make that, you know, the rudder for council decisions.
Well, it is in our strategic planning as one of our areas, right, and to look at things on lens.
But look at everything from an ecological rather than an economic or development-oriented perspective. And maybe this committee could come up with a recommendation to that. If that, as part of the, yes, we know you've got a lot of priorities on your plate, but we think that sustainability should be the lens through which all council decisions are made. And by the way, we'd like to see this built into whatever part of the OCP or a standalone plan or part of that mitigation and adaptation plan.
I'm starting here, but I'm hearing things that I've been hearing for a long time. I mean, this is not new. So I'm hearing that one of the things that when you talk about the adaptation, and you talk about mitigation, the part of the puzzle that's not there is what are we going to be doing afterward, right? Which nobody really knows. You know, how this culture is going to change due to the impossibility of continuing as we are, one way or the other, right? That something's going to have to change. So when you talk about doing mitigation, what I'm hearing from you is the need for strategy. Like, if it's just things we're doing, like, how can you put that into a strategy? It's not strategic. And I framed it as a goal, and you're framing it as being adhering to the other kind of categories that have already been there. So maybe one thing that could be done is that you just put it out as a placeholder, as to something that also is beyond adaptation, beyond mitigation, and is a new condition. That's almost academic. That's coming from academia, right? So there you go. But, I mean, it seems quite organized here. Like, it's not chaotic, which, you know, like, I can feel right away that everybody kind of knows that there's a gap, and it seems like everybody feels the gap in the same place. It's just practicalities you're talking about. Like, how are we going to do that? In fact, you can't. Nobody's done it yet. It's actually pushing on the limit. Like, what happens when you abandon things that we've been doing for a century? How does that look? Nobody knows, right? And so, I don't know, that's just my summary being coming in here as a kind of a, like, just, I don't know all the details, and I'm just looking at the overview, and it seems like that's actually quite crisp and clear, that's what's kind of like, well, what do we do? We're mitigating for, and we're adapting to, and, you know, it's all running after the ball. Yeah. And what's the part where we're actually being proactive? That's the question.
Can I add to that? So I think you alluded to this, to like climate risks and heat domes and all of that stuff. The thing is that as a town, we're looking at all this, they're just in different portfolios in different parts. And so I also look after emergency management, so we do have a climate risk and vulnerability assessment. We'll be updating our emergency plans, looking specifically at climate risk. And then a big piece of where all of this kind of fits as a home, as I think Luke's kind of working on that. But for this piece of work, I think the major goal was A, alignment with our sustainability plan in terms of our emissions reduction goal. So we have very clear, like, I could use them out here. I think it's 33% reduction by 2020.
2030.
And yeah, so it's
ambitious and pretty more ambitious than most people are doing that.
Yeah, it was 23% by 2020, 50% by 2050. Those were our goals, which were set in 2010. And then on top of that, we have provincial goals, which are 16% by 2025, 40% by 2030, 60% by 2040. So this is the way I see it, this is the overarching piece for this kind of anchored into. like this whole, and I've actually recently done a calculation on what we've achieved. It's only 10%.
Mm.
So we really have a lot to
step it up.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe that could be even sort of the goal is picking a, target.
Yeah.
Right? What is it?
The SIP Fund has some good ones. Let's see. They did it on how we grow. How we move.
I like the way they organized it, and I like the 7% a year.
Right,
that breaks it down, and that's more, realistic,
actionable, right?
And it's not way out there. It's this year we've got to do 7%.
So it doesn't seem hopeless from the if you say X number of percent.
Before we lose this discussion, your suggestion that we would just recommend rather than abandon this, that we could recommend to council and put that in some form of a motion or something that we'll get.
Well, I would say to accompany this or a similar thing.
Right.
Yes.
So Bernadette, you've got that down.
I have summarized it. I'm sorry. but what was the last thing that you wanted to, if you wanted to make a motion, that would have to be clear.
Right.
And suggesting that rather than do that now, just sort of out of the blue, and attach it to this and saying, okay, this is like a rough draft, and we would recommend to council that they, when possible, allocate resources to flesh this out into either the OCP review or.
My concern is if we do that, it's not going to happen until 2029. I think we're at now because other priorities have been pushed out 2020.
Well, better than the other recommendation that we have to give them is that everything council does is look through the overarching goal of
sustainability
and everything else. Who cares what the province is demanding or whatever? This is the priority.
If it's not, it kind of makes the designation of a climate emergency rather hollow. When is an emergency, not an emergency?
So that could also be part of, attached to this, a couple of other.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, we did actually write a short report, or we've done that in the past. The committee has. All shared ideas or information, and I've compiled it, and then we've sent that off to council. And then this could be the appendix for that report.
You just said it won't happen until 2029 if we do.
Well,
if we do what
if we're recommending that this become part of something else, a bigger plan, a bigger
Okay. Well, for the record, I totally agree with the point that Michael was making. Do we need a broad overarching vision of where we're going in the long run and what that's based on? And yet at the same time, I'm very concerned that there are actions that could be done tomorrow that we could all agree those are good actions and they don't really depend on articulating that vision because to some extent everybody agrees those are things that ought to be happening. Or we could at least probably agree and recommend them to council. So from the point of view of a busy council that has a lot on the plate, but we still want some key things to happen, would this document in its current form be useful or does it need to be more detailed or actually shorter?
This was helpful, when we did the adaptation and looking at the objectives, and we prioritized those for council. So perhaps this document, but then identifying five things or, prioritizing a few, or as you say, the sort of the low-hanging fruit, and get those done.
I definitely agree with priorities and, here's what you can do tomorrow. It's an important point also to make with respect to climate change that the day we get to zero emissions is not the day we solve the problem. That's the day we stop making it worse. So to a 90% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions is not really a success. 100% reduction is not really a success. It's a step on the way to success. So, you see, my point is, if we do these things, we do these three things, those are the priorities, great. But just as long as everybody's aware, we're going to be coming back with more priorities as soon as those are done, and then more as soon as those are done, and eventually trying to roll it into a broader vision, as Marion stated it, as sustainability would be the overarching principle behind all decisions. That's really where we want to get to.
Well, that was certainly when we did our strategic planning and whatnot the very first time. I know the mayor made it very clear that that's how he felt we should be looking at everything through that lens, and I think that was agreed upon by most council.
But of course, that's sustainability is such a broad word, people don't necessarily know what that means.
No, I know. And how do you break that down to the practical things?
I was so frustrated with the school district. They set up this climate action team because they were worried about climate change, and they spent 99% of their time talking about recycling. But quantitatively speaking, you could reduce the school district's impact on climate by 1 or 2% with recycling at most. That would be it, and then you'd be done. But they spent all their time talking about that because they thought, sustainability, okay, that means recycling. What are we doing about recycling? And I kept trying to tell them, you know, your buildings are heated with methane. Your buses are running on diesel. And that was, oh, yeah, but sustainability is recycling. So a committee that has technical knowledge and the willingness to do the research, that plays a valuable role for the council in terms of bringing forward that perspective. Like, let's actually be real about what needs to be done here. That's not criticism of you or you, Gene. I'm sure that you've got lots of work to do, and our job would be to do some of your work for you in doing that research and bringing that fact-based perspective to.
Just want to attach something. Yeah, it's good to have that sustainability lens on things. For provincial funding to get funding, it's important to have the word climate in somewhere. And it really helps to access grants and those kind of things. So I'm just putting it on. And also, like, the relationship between sustainability and climate change and action is not, it's very blurry, like, it's not super clear to a lot of people. So, some people think they're separate, some people think it's one within the other, it's not always very clear.
We don't have all that much time. I wonder whether or not it's worth it then if we have agreed that we'll sort of stick with this and then add some embellishments that it'll go to council with, recommending more action and a different perspective on climate mitigation as a priority. But is it possible now just to kind of go through this and see how we could augment it? Like you were mentioning how the SOAP timelines that they had. And so, you know, a lot of those could maybe be borrowed.
Mm-hmm.
They've obviously done a lot of work, and they're quite, I mean, they're not probably rigorous enough. Nothing is rigorous enough unless we all stop doing everything tomorrow. But a lot of those timelines they have would be really useful and recommend it out there.
Yep. Should we go over this?
Sure.
Lead us through?
Yeah, sure.
That'd be great. So the first area of action was reduction of corporate emissions. And many of these things are, like, these initiatives are ongoing. So we are working on a green street, greening our fleet, which is, like, transitioning to EVs, doing a fleet optimization plan, not to have an idling the policy, the strategy and policy around that. And the RFP for that is ready from our end and should hopefully go out as Doug said soon.
I guess my concern about that is I think that's great and I'm really happy that's happening, but what the terms of reference for that consultant would be would make a difference. If you use the word optimization and only has a meaning versus, you know, what are you optimizing? Is it a cost optimization? Or what, is there a specific mandate with respect to zero emissions by a certain date. That's what I think.
We put that in because that was your feedback from last time.
Yeah.
So we put in our own emissions reduction goals into the terms of reference.
Perfect.
And so it's a phased approach. So phase one will be looking at our existing fleet and kind of just optimizing that fleet. What is it called, Luke? Fleet
right sizing.
Yeah. First is right sizing, and then is electrification. So it's a two-stage kind of process that will follow. And from those recommendations, so hopefully they'll be able to give us a phased recommendation for fleet, shifting over the fleet to zero EVs or EVs, and that kind of thing. So like a proper action plan to work on.
Could we take out the word consider?
And yeah,
it was great to phase out.
Yeah,
e-generating equipment.
Actually, changes on the...
If the committee's in agreement, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
All the language should be as kind of direct and forceful as possible. So rather than any considers or investigate... Unless Shinjin would do that.
I would prefer to
see. I think I can
just clear. I'm on the end, right? So I can just stick it out.
It's not clear if consider means consider doing it at all or consider how.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just not clear in English.
Yeah, and if we just say phase out.
Yeah,
just change it. No, change.
Yeah.
So then the next action was looking at three of our major downtown facilities, this town hall, civic center, and the community hall. And do an energy audit for that, baselining. And then we want to apply for a grant to the FCM, the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, to do a feasibility study to help us reduce those emissions from these three town-owned buildings. That's about a $200,000 grant, which is up on the table. It's a lot of money. And we are in the process of engaging a consultant to help us with the baseline assessment and the initial energy audit to help put together the application. So that's a work in progress.
With respect to that one of the things that I think was a big mistake that the school district made is they went through their whole set of buildings putting in high efficiency boilers.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're locked into burning methane for another 10, 15 years. So it's a dead end street. It's a cul-de-sac. You get a little bit towards your destination, and then you have to turn around and drive all the way back out and go down another street to get where you're going. So it's better to leave the existing boiler for another few years and go right to a heat pump system rather than saying, let's just make this boiler more efficient, because then you reduce your emissions by 10, 15, 20%. And then you've got an expensive piece of equipment that you're just going to, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I don't know if you've already gone to high efficiency boilers and all these buildings yet or not.
No, this is a long
route.
We're going to go to like heat pump electrification.
Yes.
Because the target is to meet our emissions reduction goal, so that's what we will be looking.
I'm not quite clear why all greenhouse gas generating equipment, especially two-stroke engines, is only to be phased out after fleet right sizing and greening.
Because we can't do it all at once.
Oh, wouldn't it be possible to simply phase out the two-stroke engines in the ground maintenance equipment?
Well, hopefully we're not buying new ones.
We're not buying new ones. Probably.
Maybe that's what we could say is the moratorium.
The word after referred to the study or to the greening in the right time.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I refer to the study. That's just the word out there right now.
Okay.
Because it seems like sort of we called low-hanging fruit. You know, it's it's your own equipment, and so it doesn't have to convince anybody or anything.
It would be just as good if we just said phase out the greenhouse gas generating equipment, especially to stroke engines, period, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's soon as it can happen, we want it to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't have to talk. That's fine.
Yeah.
Perfect. That sounds good. Okay. And then, of course, the town facilities, so moving away from natural gas, as we're saying, to more like heat pumps and electric sources. And that will be, this is a longer term. So after that study is completed, then based on that study, we will get capital works expenditure, hopefully approved from somewhere.
Well, the study has like a cost benefit analysis.
Yeah.
Because one thing that struck me about cost benefit analysis is you have to look at the long term payback.
Yeah.
And another thing, I shared something with Dan about this a while ago, that when we look at greenhouse gas emissions strategies, like converting a building from gas burning to a heat pump, for example, there's a cost, there's a benefit. But one of the benefits that's never quantified is the people who won't die because of it. So let me just show you this briefly. Paper that was published in Nature Communications, 2019, I think. Daniel Bressler, the mortality cost of carbon. He estimates that for every 4,000 tons of CO2 emitted, we can expect one person to lose their life between now and 2010 as a result of heat. Remember I showed you that?
That was a while ago.
Yeah. And it's not nice to talk about, but we know that 600 people roughly died in BC as a result of the heat dome.
And I'd like to mention all the other species that are also
coming,
as I thought.
Sure, absolutely.
Phil had an interesting little section under how we grow the transportation thing. It said that they wanted to have an inclusion of natural assets within the district asset management program to financially account for ecological values, which is
we are working on.
We are working on.
Another program that's going on.
We are looking at, we have asset management, and we're just, we're a little behind some of the other municipalities on this, but we've been working on it for quite a while, but we don't have a ton of staff or the resources, so, but it is definitely on the radar that that's something, and I think in the next couple of years, the budgeting process and our financial plan will start to include those.
So when we're talking converting to heat pumps for town facilities, are we talking about both air source and ground source heat pumps?
It will depend on the recommendations.
Right.
From the
town. Yeah, okay. So, but that's in play.
Yes.
Yeah.
When we look at things like solar panels and other renewables.
Yeah. So that's the TOR, which... the consultant will help us to write. So I'm taking all the feedback and making sure that's integrated in the
Yeah, because one of the concerns from the air source heat pumps for large buildings is the noise.
Yeah.
Took a little bit irritating.
Or residences. Even residences.
Yeah.
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 It depends how much you spend on the higher end ones.
When they say 60 decibels, it's fine if you think about it compared to even this room, just barely 55 or something. But if you have a quiet night and your window's open and the neighbor's running at 50 decibels, it'll change your night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
That's a really something people don't think of.
Uh-huh.
The engineers will say, 55 decibels, what are you worried about? And
then
everybody
in the neighborhood has 55
cents.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, it'd be good if there were like siting guidelines for them or something, I don't know.
Yeah, you don't put them in the side yard between houses.
Yeah.
There's windows.
Vancouver has
you can do that very easily in terms of same with zoning and building code where you have windows, you don't have,
I think I raised that at one time, but I don't know if that went anywhere. I can't remember if it was supposed to be a...
Yeah, I think you had requested best practices documents for a useful placement of heat pumps.
Right.
When it's down, it doesn't require permits for heat pumps, so that's...
Oh, that's different.
You know, we would have to introduce a regulatory program before we could really impose it. So I think we might have found the best practices and... pass it around a little bit, but I don't think it went
first. Yeah. So the airport operations, this is a big one. I think a few meetings ago we had this consultant, this company come and show us green fuel, electric small airplane. So that's the long-term vision, but we'll continue to kind of monitor this. This is not the easiest action to do. It's on the list. One thing we've been working for several years is active transportation. So we call it the age-friendly transportation plan, but it's actually very much an active transportation plan. So expanding the infrastructure to fit what you, the bike lanes, shoulders, all those kinds of things that's included in this.
Is that under review or your?
It was just been updated, actually, and it's now called Community Transportation.
Oh, is it? Okay, that's age friendly.
Yeah, it's called something else. So I'm trying to think of the top priorities, whether they were actually, well, there are some other ones, like along the waterfront with a ditch infill and then having more of an active transportation lane along the waterfront. This one.
So Kevin has really good active transportation ideas.
Yeah.
Or wording.
We had quite a lot of discussion in our workshop about this, and it's not reflected in here. Well, that, like we talked about, conflicts between
walkers and bikers.
Right, walkers and bikers. Yeah, that's a growing thing. Like the growing use of e-bikes, for example, and the desirability of separation. You know, our existing bike lanes are multi-modal, bike, pedestrian, and no lanes or anything. But if you really wanted to get into people using bikes as a significant mode of transportation throughout the whole town network, separation and lanes might be useful, that kind of thing.
But it is more later on under 4 direct influence, the emissions. There's 8.1 has a number of additional, like connecting with other communities.
But again, this would be the kind of thing that would be fleshed out more if it were to be extended, but right now it's just like direction and intention.
Well, certainly I think if council were curious about some of these areas, then they could identify, you know, and get more, ask for more information.
What?
In 4.1, where you specify adding faster planning for bike and pedestrian infrastructure in key locations, example given our QF and new bus garage, I would love to see schools added to that. I think a lot more people could be walking to school. We have huge issues at Arrowview Elementary with cars. We can't even, as parents, it takes me 15 minutes just to get out with my kids in the car. Because it's so backed up. We also live a 2-minute drive from the school. I just don't want them taking a 25-minute walk. There's no way for them to walk there. So if we can look at schools as, in addition to downtown here as a priority, I think that we could get a lot of people out of their cars.
So the next two are more innovation and sustainability. They're not specific to the mitigation, but the rewilding landscape. So this is a very big topic for our group here because we want to, it's like the war against the lawn wars. If we had to, there's no better way to say. So like looking at more natural landscapes, local plants and stuff and people, nature kind of species. And also one thing relates to this, and it probably comes down more below, is the removal of the invasive species, big drive here for that. And the Luke, I think, is working with the operations department on this water rate status thing to update so that there's sort of enhanced people. Because what happened in the summer, you know what happened, right? Like people just watered their lawns because they didn't have restrictions. And so just to kind of get around those things.
Yeah.
What about encouraging water retention? There's, you know, in Denmark, that was really many years ago. In most houses in Denmark, they don't have rainwater meters. But you can buy these tall things that just sit on the corner of your house and collect the water. They're about this much in diameter. And they collect the water from the roof and rather than letting it just go to the pipe. So water retention would be... could be easily encouraged.
Yeah, Vancouver had a plan where you could get these water tanks that was just the intercepts with downspouts, and they sold them once a year for $25 or something.
RDN has them, but I think they're far more expensive than that.
That's all. Again, we could get rid of the consider or
please
list with aerosolists and then update water rates.
Yeah.
Not encourage reducing, but anyway, the wording could always be a little bit more forceful to get the message across.
And so one thing we also are thinking about in terms of our capital investments is like when we look at project prioritization matrices, like adding in that piece of mitigation and sustainability into that, especially GHG reduction, are we going for oil-based heating or heat pumps? So like making that as a criteria for assessing our new project. So something I can do as a town. So that's under the first one, and the education and awareness more community.
Oh, could I just add one last thing for develop policy? Instead of saying make GHG reduction a criterion, could it be a primary, make it a primary criterion, not just one of many, or go down the list or anything?
Got it. Yeah. Fine. Yes. So this one, yeah, go ahead.
Are we still on 1.8 there? I guess what I'm thinking about this is there's been a lot of capital projects over the years and people come forward with new proposals for them. But are they assessed in terms of, like, if you have money to spend, if you spend it on one thing, you can't spend it on another thing. So you have to ask yourself, is this the most important thing to spend the money on? And I would like to have some kind of an assessment process that council would go through or staff would go through in preparing staff reports on proposed projects that would ask what else could we do with this money in terms of climate mitigation? You know, if we're saying we're going to spend $1 million on some facility we're going to build or some improvement to the town, what would that $1 million buy instead in terms of, not only, we'd want to see what the greenhouse gas implications of the project are, like if it's built out of concrete and steel, then there's greenhouse gas emissions due to building it, and maybe ongoing ones due to operating it or not, I don't know. But there's also the foregone emission that you could have achieved if you use that money for something else. So that.
Like not building it.
Yeah, like if it's a climate emergency, wouldn't we want to spend a lot of our money addressing the emergency rather than say, well, we'll leave the emergency until later, we'll spend the money on this instead?
Well, in part of that, looking at everything through the overarching goal of encouraging sustainability rather than develop business as usual.
Exactly. I don't know how to get at that in terms of what we're writing here, but that's the perspective that I'd like to bring to it is that anytime somebody comes forward with, well, we want to build this, you know, and I don't want to name specific projects, but probably because it's not personal or anything like that. It's, it's just a question of, is that really the best way to spend that money? Or, you know, giving our children a hope of a future livable planet, would that actually be a little bit better way to spend it?
Yeah.
There's actually, you know, a specific aspect of that is the first item. The first item is actually a specific version of 1.1 is a specific version of 1.8. You can almost say 1.1 is an example. So 1.8 would be across the board. Technically, you'd have to do that across the board for everything.
It's a corporate policy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. I mean, it's actually what we're talking about here, even actually. That's why is it 1.8? It should be like a rider on the whole thing.
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking of things that are built, but you're right, buying equipment is a capital project too, so yeah.
Approving development.
Yeah, you're right.
I think there will be a conflict between purpose, sometimes service of levels that we have to provide at some level,
I had a really good conversation with the fire chief about, and I asked him, are you looking at battery vehicles? And he said, yes, but they're very expensive. Like, to go to a new fire department that would have battery electric as opposed to diesel would add over $1 million to the price tag. That's a lot of money to spend. But he said those vehicles go through a lot of diesel in a year, and so there would be a significant emissions reduction by doing that. So maybe that would be a good way to spend the money, as opposed to something else we might do with $1 million that would not have any reduction associated with it at all.
So what I hear you're saying is that when, like, you do an annual planning with the council, then maybe go through the whole list with everything and with the sustainability lens in mind, and then kind of weigh all the projects through that lens.
Like, yeah, it's a revolutionary idea.
Right.
It's starting the whole...
Yes, that would be great, and it would be good for there to be some quantitative analysis, because people sometimes say, well, this is good for the environment, so we'll do it, but there's no, it's like that whole thing I was talking about with the recycling. Yes, it's good, but it's a bunch of small items.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, since we're on education and awareness, that Lindsay sent us to the SOUP plan about the education and awareness part of it, and it was occurring to me because of discussions I've had that what people really need is not more evidence that there is a huge crisis or more ideas about what they can do, but evidence that if, given that there's the crisis, and if they were to carry out all these mitigations, like reducing transportation and putting in heat pumps and so on, what difference would it make? Because what I'm hearing from people is it's hopeless. It doesn't matter what we do. You know, we're doomed. We're in the lifeboat, so we might as well just drink up the last bit of water and eat the last of the supplies, and because we're going to sink anyway.
Oh, I mean, you hear that from people?
I hear that from myself. Yeah, I know, I'm hearing that from people. And they're saying, well, what's the point of doing all this mitigation stuff? So I know it's probably not even possible at this point. It's like you were talking about, here we are trying to project into the future, which we have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. And how could we possibly say, okay, if we all put in heat pumps, then this would be the actual reduction, and this would be the actual impact on the climate. I don't know if it's even possible, but that's what people need.
I believe it's worthwhile to make these sacrifices.
I think they need even smaller actions as well. Simply wash your clothes less often. You not only save the pollution of nanoparticles into our water systems, into the oceans, but you're saving water as well. In particular, if you use a gentle cycle, a lot of clothes can be washed quite adequately without going through the full cycle with hot water and so on and so forth. I mean, people all over the world have been doing that for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years.
So I think I want to add that one of the aspects what you're talking about is that people want to have advantages. I think it's possible to look at a lot of these things from a design point of view rather than just a technical point of view, and bring in, like, prioritize qualitative aspects that are automatically built into things. So, for example, the bugbear of closing down the street to traffic, right? That comes up all the time, and then everybody rages against it, right? That meeting that was there the other day for the bus garage, 90% of the talk was about parking, by the way.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. But my point is that as from my career perspective, I think that we're really undervaluing that design aspect as being able to present people with those environmental experiential advantages that they have. So something like walking between from QF through between the houses where it's just a pathway where it's green, right? It's a great little walk. It's like a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
If you spread that out and have more of those, it's not expensive. It's just a matter of organizing it in the spaces that are already there. But how do you present that to people? And then there are many others. Which are about quieting the atmosphere, having more birds coming in because there's less harassment of the birds so that they start to come, things like that. I think that it's not something to do right here, but I think that it's undervalued a lot of times as to how, for example, you're saying wash your clothes less, you know, the first thing that a person would say is and smell more. So they're not seeing a benefit from that for themselves, right? So that would be a hard sell. Mm-hmm. But there's a few others that could be an easier sell if you were able to actually demonstrate how the value of that space that we live in improves. So I'm not able to give specific examples right now because that's a whole other discussion, but I think it's generally pretty low-hanging fruit, and it's not brought in very well. And I think that the one person at the meeting for the garden, he said everybody put up their hand for this thing being a total loss, and you went in and did really well with that. You said, let's not do this right now because it's really being negative, right?
Yeah.
But the truth is that they kind of dropped the ball, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't show us anything that would be qualitatively better mm-hmm. or good. And that's something that's really important to
come out. An example of what you're talking about is, you know, there's talk about not having new gas hookups to homes, and people think, oh, that would make my home heating more expensive. But there's research shows children growing up in a home with a gas stove has the same impact as growing up in a house where there's a smoker.
Yeah.
So everybody cares about the health of their children. So if you can say a benefit of not having gas hookups to homes is healthier children, then it's not a negative. It's not you having to do without something you like, which is a gas stove. It's getting something you want, which is your health.
The thing more difficult with greenhouse gas emissions, and that you're saying, okay, so if we put gas in our cars, which everybody loves, or just loves parking, and all that, and ask them to spend a lot of money on heating equipment, even if there's benefits, if it would be possible to somehow point out how, if greenhouse gas emissions were to be reduced by, you know, whatever the goal we're setting for ourselves is, then this is how, instead of this level of a climate disaster, we would have this moderate level instead.
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible to know if anybody's doing that?
That's so we can do our own personal emissions reductions, but because climatic systems are global, it's almost impossible to quantify, like, what our little action does.
Yeah, no, yeah. I know. It would have to be on a global level. Like, if everybody would
if here were multiplied across...
Right.
Everything.
Yeah, this would be the effect we would be having if everybody would be behaving the same. That's tangible.
And here would be the reduction.
That's tangible.
And then here would be maybe the change in heat domes or...
Right. Luke, I think you want to jump in here.
I just wanted to bring everyone's attention to the time. I want to spend the last few minutes of the meeting just talking about what's next. Strategies for advancing this.
Yeah.
So that next meeting we get to the first agenda.
Well, I think that if everyone could read through this and then if you have specific comments or concerns, then we could send them to, who should we send them to?
So Ginny?
Yeah. Okay. And just because we haven't been able to get all the way through here. So,
and then if you think that there's something that's missing or like the example of having encourage water retention. I think that was excellent.
That's great.
Yeah.
So some of those other things that maybe, especially from a fresh set of eyes, you might see things that that why didn't we include something? So,
and it might be worthwhile. I was just thinking that maybe Shinjini and Angela and Michael could get together and talk about some of the other plans that are in place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of the fact that you were talking about what is this adaptation thing that you're referring to, the action plan. Like, there's just a few pieces already on the chessboard, and you know,
yeah,
to know what they are. So maybe the three.
That would be interesting.
Sure, the time to get together.
And then what about the statements that we want to have accompany this? And the other thing is the whole visual piece that I think is very impactful and should not be forgotten, put in the closet somewhere. I think it would be great to make sure that that's shared and
could go up on the artwork.
Yeah.
Could go up on the website. Speaking of which, the website redesign would be another really good opportunity to look at website redesign from the perspective of putting sustainability and ecology, as the landing page, metaphorically speaking, as opposed to the way the website is now, where all the different little categories that, municipalities have always used, and reproduce those, but instead, turn it upside down. And here's, Folsom Beach, with the goal of sustainability, for which there was an award at one point for the sustainability plan, right? And some of the goals and so on, right up front, you land on the page and this is what Folsom Beach is about, and then here you can find, at the bottom, here's how you can get a development permit, or so you can find maps or whatever. But just focusing all the town's activities from that point of view.
And the education and awareness could be linked from there too.
Yeah.
One thing I see missing here, we talked about in the workshop, was the idea of avoiding urban sprawl, maintaining the compact, walkable, livable community.
Yes.
And it was really interesting, Marianne and I met with the consultants doing the community wildfire resilience, and that really resonated with what they were talking about, that, there's a big issue with so-called wildland urban interface fires as we spread our residential developments further out away from the town center. We have more infrastructure at risk due to that. So it's just an interesting, synergy or something between, it's a good thing for climate mitigation to maintain the compact community, but also good for that.
And it's part of the town's sustainability goal, isn't it? A compact community.
One time we had toads too. There was, intended to be out by the airport. There was intended to be like a convenience store and all the things that you would need. And then again, out by Westridge, that area, the same kind of thing, a node where you don't have to drive all the way into town to get a carton of milk. You can, just walk.
It's still in the plan, so that's exciting. Still no seat. But I want to share one more thing for you to read before our next meeting, and that is on the website, Changing recently posted the RDM emissions report that the committee had asked about in the past. So
I think it was
quite reading. And, shows how the town's emissions have changed over the last 15 years. And it's been an estimate based on some proxy data because we can think all because some of the direct data, like I think it's good information, definitely worth reading.
Okay. And if people have thoughts about how to present this, like if there's something that we want to include, accompanying reports, some information, some vision statements, or whatever it is, maybe a story. Or I like the way that Sue uses stories to get the message across, right? I think people relate to stories.
Yeah.
And it can be kind of complicated and out there, some of the ideas, and sort of bring it home and relatable to people in their everyday lives. Like even when you talked about the clothes washing, I remember a story not that long ago about how jeans were never intended to be washed every time.
Yeah.
the story of jeans is to not wash them every time.
Actually, you realize telling us now not to wash your jeans.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting. There's, there's different relatable stories.
Where do we find the RDM solution?
It's on the desk to send the link.
Town's website, Town Services Climate Action, right there.
Okay. That was added recently.
And also, I just have an administrative question about your next meeting. So you're not scheduled until May.
But that's not.
Do you have an idea of when you would like to meet?
Yes. We should look at a calendar. Yes, as soon as possible.
Are these meetings always an hour and a half?
I do wonder if we move the meeting to this time specifically
for the youth
seeking to join.
Yes.
Keegan is not going to join.
Let's just start it.
Move it back because I feel like we're always like, about to pull the fire alarm. It's 4:30. Like,
restart it too.
Maybe we should either move it up or move it back to our original day.
Which was what?
Today was it?
Oh.
Or was it Friday originally?
Friday or something like that.
Friday works for...
At 2 o'clock, I think. I think it's not the day, it's the time.
Yeah. Why don't we move it to 2? At least that would give us a little bit of breathing room. I don't like cutting discussion short now, like making up everyone late to get home, so...
So we would to change the terms of reference for start to see a motion. Not right?
To make a motion to change the time, start time from 3 p.m. to 2 p.m. Doug? I second that, Marion. Okay. All those in favor? Yeah, great. No one opposed? That carries.
Okay. And then a date that you got from the edge.
Yeah, so there's the 8th, 15th, 22nd, 29th. I think the 29th is Good Friday, maybe the 22nd of March. Is that too soon?
We should
be okay. That's during spring break, but I don't know how many people are impacted by spring break.
Does that not work for you then?
I'll make it work. We'll just tentatively say that we'll try for that date. Sometimes we've had to move things around it, so.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess we'll keep this on as ongoing business. And does anybody have any new business before we move adjournment? Nope. Okay. Somebody want to make a motion to adjourn? David? Thank you. We are adjourned at 4:32.